Rewind, your year in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is the year-end rewind, a very special rewind in which we look at the top 15 stories, five honorable mentions, and then we count down the top 10. And we have a tradition. Technical Director Henry Cerugi is here to help us with the top 10. Thank you, Henry. Busy year, JR.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly busy year.
They're never quiet.
Let's get right into it. Okay, let's start with honorable mentions. This is my nominee. We have the first women serving in the state assembly in 1925, the first woman in the state senate in 1975. My nominee honorable mention is the assembly parity in the Senate Assembly Democratic Caucus, 18 men, 18 women. I just think that's significant. Any PSs, JR?
Well, it's significant, but it's also a result of them being such a small minority. I mean, they are talking like 36 members.
Yeah.
Nevada, I believe, becomes the first legislature with a majority of it being female lawmakers. So something to note there.
Well, also a PS, the makeup of our Supreme Court, 6 women, mm-hmm. 1 male. Okay, next honorable mention. The sparring back and forth by our GOP leaders, the governor, the Assembly Speaker Voss, and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. I'll go first. The governor surprised the legislative leaders by saying, let's have a $100 per child rebate. What else stuck out at you?
Well, just if you have the same personalities and the same fights over and over again, the things grow stale. It's just like, I'm the oldest of 5 siblings. When we get together, the first night's always a lot of fun. The second night, somebody says something, you let it go. The third night, you don't, because those old wounds don't heal. Same thing here. You have Fitzgerald is one of the longest-serving majority leaders in the Senate.
Yes.
Voss is going to be the longest-serving Speaker of the Assembly in the next session. And Walker's governor for 8 years. Same personalities, a lot of the same fights over and over again. Kind of adds up after a while.
Well, also, just to P.S. before we go to the next honorable mention, when the governor in his campaign said, I'm not going to raise the gas tax or the vehicle registration fee, this goes back to last year's fight, mm-hmm. led to the impasse over how we pay for highways. So that was another sore point, right?
And the tension played out in the extraordinary session bills where Robin Voss drove that train, and you saw what happens with Fitzgerald and his caucus, which is less, you're not able to drive that caucus anywhere. It has to find its way on its own, and then Fitz closes the deal. That whole, bogged down was a result of Fitzgerald trying to push his caucus in a short window to reach a conclusion before it was ready.
Okay, next honorable mention. I found it very unusual that the state Senate would dismiss the administrators of both the elections and the ethics commissions in the wake of Attorney General Brad Schimel releasing some John Doe records. I was really taken aback by that. Your take on that?
Speaking of old wounds that don't heal, I mean, this is a result of John Doe. Like, there are Republicans who are still unhappy how they were treated by John Doe investigators, both in 1 and 2, between Governor Walker and the legislature. And the details of that report came out basically a year ago, mm-hmm. just added fuel to that fire. So, it's part of that. They just can't, I don't know if they'll ever get over that.
Yeah, and Ethics Administrator Brian Bell dropped back to his old state job, and Michael Haas, I believe, is still on the staff of the elections. Okay, next honorable mention is Kimberly Clark tax breaks. Off, on, and off, on, and then back on. So let's talk about it. Kimberly Clark announced early in the year they were going to shut down that Fox Valley plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Assembly, I think in April.
They're going to shut down 2 plants.
Thank you very much. But the one that was really the issue here is that Fox Valley plant, which is 388 jobs.
Now it is. It was closer to 500 when this all began.
Okay. So Kimberly Clark says we're going to take down 2 plants, and the effort is to save this larger one. Assembly in the spring passed a bill that would offer them incentives.
For both plants. That was still targeting both plants in February.
Right.
That bill went nowhere in the Senate.
Right. Even though we had a lame duck session called to Fitzgerald, ostensibly, on that Kimberly Clark bill, it never even got a vote.
Well, Fitzgerald basically undercut that when he said he had 10 or 11 Republican votes, which meant he needed at a minimum, he needs 6 Democratic votes to pass that bill.
Yep.
Democrats will tell you they were never asked their opinion about the bill. They didn't help draft the bill. They weren't even in discussions. It was only like post-mortem or after the fact, you know, Roger Roth, who's from that district, you know, Republican from Appleton, saying, hey, can you support it? They're like, you guys didn't include us. How can you expect us to vote for a bill when we had no say in it? So that thing was pretty much dead all fall. And when Fitz said, I need 6 votes from the Dems, it was done.
Yeah, none of the Dems were going to support it. But then, recently, the governor, working through the Enterprise Zone mm-hmm. statute, gets a commitment from Kimberly Clark. Let's talk about it. They would be paid up to $28 million. Now, I think your reporting this week said that's front-loaded. They could get 8.5 in the first year.
My colleague Brown O'Reilly got a copy of the contract, $8.5 million up to in the first year, so you get a lot up front. The thing about it is, they went from a bill that would be 15 years and cost a maximum of $100 million. That was, you know, for both plans. You know, to get down to one is a little bit cheaper, but that was that deal. The deal that WEDIC negotiated with them is 5 years up to $28 million mm-hmm. and includes a $200 million investment by Kimberly Clark in the plant, which a lot of Democrats go, well, how come they negotiated a better deal than you guys did
right.
On this whole thing? How'd that work? How'd that happen?
Right.
Other postscript. The tool that Governor Walker used to use an enterprise zone, that pre-authorized enterprise zone to land this deal, is no longer available to Tony Evers. Evers will have to now, going forward, ask the Joint Finance Committee to sign off on such a deal before it can go into place. Walker did it without legislative approval. Big
wow.
change.
Yeah, big change. Okay, last honorable mention before we get to the top 10. No state action on pre-existing conditions. Now, when you and I talked about this, we wondered whether this should be in the top 10. But when I covered Tony Evers in La Crosse for the budget hearing, he said, yes, this is very important. I don't know yet what I can include because we have to wait for the U.S. Court of Appeals ruling on the federal judges mm-hmm. That threw it out, and then potentially a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. So Evers in La Crosse said we're 2 years away from really knowing the future of this. But isn't this a bigger deal than an honorable mention? No?
It could be, yes. It was a symptom of things going on. And also, it became the issue that we didn't see coming a year ago as being a driver in this election. It was a big factor for Evers winning.
Yes.
Josh Call for Attorney General ran on the idea of him withdrawing the state from that lawsuit, which produced the result from that Friday decision in December about the Affordable Care Act. It became something that Democrats whacked Republicans on up and down the ballot at the state and federal level. Now, in the summer of 2017, Republicans were all charged up to repeal Obamacare. They opened the door to this attack with that failed repeal, because if you repeal the Affordable Care Act, you take away this protection. Now, Republicans will say, look, we would put something back in place. Governor Walker said repeatedly, as long as I'm governor, you'll have those protections. Not sure they exist right now because of the federal judge's decision. He's still governor.
Yeah.
That said, they couldn't get something together at the state level to provide as much as they could under state law, because as I understand it, they couldn't match the language of the Affordable Care Act because of certain restrictions, but they were trying to get close. They couldn't pull it together because Democrats said in the Senate, what you're trying to do when you take away a cap on the cost to consumers yeah. makes it meaningless. And two Republicans said, we're not into this. We don't like the idea of doing this. And that killed the bill.
But every Charles Franklin poll this year, mm-hmm. it played in the top 3. It's a major issue. Okay, now let's talk about the top 10 stories. And Henry, give us a little intro. Right. Number 10. All right, number 10. Tammy Baldwin beats State Senator Leah Vukmir mm-hmm. by, what, 10 or 11 points?
Yes.
Okay. No big surprise. How come Vukmir didn't get any traction?
And that's why it's, to me, why it's at 10 and not higher up, because, look, when Kevin Nicholson was running for the GOP nomination, he had the backing of Dick Uihlein, an Illinois businessman who was pumping millions of dollars into races this year. That seemed to be a sign that if Nicholson were the person, the nominee, Uihlein would play.
Yeah.
Well, once Nicholson lost the primary, Uihlein didn't come to play. Other groups didn't step up behind Vukmir, and she did not have the resources that Baldwin did. By our count, Tammy Baldwin raised and spent $30 million between
over the 6 years of her
over the 6 years between
of her first
after
term.
Winning in 2012
yep.
through Election Day of 2018.
$30 million.
$30 million. Whew. That is now Walker raised that kind of money without any contribution limits during the recalls. I've never seen somebody with caps of $2,700 in primary and $2,700 in general raise that kind of money out of Wisconsin. That is the national network Tammy Baldwin has as the first openly gay U.S. senator, a progressive Democrat. I mean, like, go on the list of why the small dollar donors love her. She had that resource. She also did it pretty much on her own. I mean, there were groups doing things like canvassing, you know, digital, but as far as like a big group doing a big giant TV buy, there wasn't one. It was Baldwin on her own. And if you go back and look at this race, in August, after Buchner won the primary, Americans for Prosperity and Concerned Veterans for America did like a decent sized buy for a week. Then all went away. Now, there was a super PAC backing Buchner, came in and did stuff, but it never matched what Baldwin could do, in part because you look at that map and we were so far down, it wasn't a place to go play.
Okay, but the thing that we've mentioned before, I want to come back to it. It still intrigues me that Buchner, a geriatric nurse, had found health care as a major liability as an issue. She was just pushing this, push back against Baldwin, nailing her repeatedly on health care. And she's a geriatric nurse.
Yeah, I mean, give her credit and the GOP credit, state GOP. They got her through the primary. She won that nomination based on the strength of her base in southeastern Wisconsin. But Leah Buchner ran a primary-oriented campaign message-wise in a general election environment that was not receptive to it. And she was put on the defensive over health care and other things, and it just never, she never took off.
Okay. Take us to number nine, Doctor. Number nine, Republicans keep their lock on the legislature. When the new session convenes in January, the Senate will be 1914. Thanks for the correction. And the Assembly will be 63-36. Did I get that one right?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Now, let's talk about why they kept the lock, because why they kept the lock on the ledge, because part of it is the whole gerrymander and redistricting lawsuit. The U.S. Supreme Court earlier this year refused to hear Wisconsin's appeal, sent it back. That's still perking. So reasons why the GOP kept the lock on the ledge.
Resources, maps, and candidates. So first, resources. Look, in the Assembly, if you're a donor this year looking, where do I have the best impact, where are you going to put your money? The governor's race, right? Tony Evers had the best shot, or Democrat had the best shot of beating Walker and having control of that branch versus winning back the Senate or the Assembly. So the Assembly was a long shot for anything. So they were not getting the resources. Two, the places that races were in play are places where Democrats are struggling right now. Rural Wisconsin, right? We had some surprise races in southeastern Wisconsin where you're seeing the Trump effect. But still, other than the Wauwatosa-based district Ron Beviding won over Matt Adamczyk, there wasn't really a lot of seats that were truly close. Todd Novak down southwestern Wisconsin. Evers won that district, but Novak won re-election. The Robin Vining seat that she won. Scott Walker won that seat, but she won that Assembly race. It's just a factor of those maps tilt Republican, in part because of geography. I mean, the reality is you've got a lot of Democrats in Madison and Milwaukee and not a lot of them out in, you know, pick your rural Wisconsin County living there.
Yeah,
that
hip
impacts things.
But what about the arguments of Democratic reps Greta Neubauer and Dianne Hesselbein? Assembly Democrats got 53% of the collective vote for candidates for the Assembly and have one-third of the seats.
And Robin Voss will tell you that Republicans got 56% of the votes in contested races, and both those numbers are misleading, and here's why. Republicans didn't bother to run people in certain Assembly seats because they're so Democratic. That helps impact the number of votes that they got overall. When Robin Voss talks about that 56%, he's talking about seats on Republican territory. Mm-hmm. That's not a true measure. Tony Evers won statewide, but he didn't win a majority of the Assembly seats statewide. That tells you something about the maps and the geography of it. Now, I'm not a map drawer, but if you want to draw a truly fair 50-50 map, how do you take Dane County and maximize what it does because there are so many Democrats here? The same with Milwaukee. That's an issue. Now, I don't know how the maps will be drawn by the courts probably in 2021, but or 2022, but it's just difficult to create a map that's truly 50-50 with where we live. That said, you can't deny these maps favor Republicans. They maximize their opportunities with how they drew them.
Okay, and the only PS I have on that is in the November 2020 elections, we will have the same maps in place.
Yep. Right. Barring, now, that lawsuit is still alive.
Okay, yeah.
But the Supreme Court not taking up with Kennedy on the court, you know, Justice Kennedy has now left and replaced by Kavanaugh. It's just not seen, there just isn't the audience, it seems like, to shake up that lawsuit, the Supreme Court again.
Okay, number eight, take us away. love it, Henry. Management and other issues involving inmates and staff problems continue at our juvenile prisons. Now, we're talking years after the feds opened an investigation. None of us ever know when or if it's going to end. Hmm. And this led to some consensus in the legislature. Okay, let's close the two juvenile prisons. Let's make them a medium security adult prison. Let's open county-run regional facilities. So, but the inability of the Walker administration and the Department of Justice and the feds to come up with meaningful solutions at our juvenile prisons, your take?
When we talked this a year ago, I kind of made a prediction that you wouldn't see an ad just on the prison, juvenile prison issue. The reality is voters, right or wrong, aren't that sympathetic to people who are in, who are incarcerated, especially juveniles. However, this goes to the management capabilities of Governor Walker overall. Yeah. So you saw Evers bring this up as an issue of there's something wrong. They're falling down the job. Again, I didn't see an ad about it, so I'm not diminishing the issue, but I'm saying as a driver for the election, wasn't that big a deal. But as an issue that go in that, that management perception of Walker, it played a role. Remember, too, Tony Evers has said maybe we need more time to figure this out. There's a lot of questions about this plan they devised at the end of the session to try and get something. They want to get anything done before they went home this spring because they knew it was an issue they had to address. Right. And there still may be some time to figure things out.
Right. And Mr. Evers just named a new corrections secretary. We don't know where he's at on that. This is just the stalemate and the frustration on the part of local officials. Remember, one was a Racine County judge who years ago said, I'm not sending any of our juveniles to the state prison. So the that goes on. Take us to number seven. Right. Number seven, Foxconn breaks ground, buys innovation centers in Green Bay and Eau Claire, buys a major downtown landmark to be their Wisconsin North American headquarters. Opens, as I said, breaks ground, in Mount Pleasant and cuts a $200 million deal with the UW-Madison, which is an R&D deal. But the UW-Madison's got to come up with half of that. Foxconn number seven, JR.
So this issue is interesting to me in that Governor Walker's struggle was how to make people outside of the immediate area of the plant care or see a value in it.
Right.
So there is a feeling among some people I talked to that those innovation centers in Green Bay and in Eau Claire are trying to plant a flag for Foxconn outside of southeastern Wisconsin. Look at Governor Walker's ads. I think they were in August, September. He ran ads tailored to each region of the state saying, there's an impact. You have people here for this company in your backyard who are working on the Foxconn plant. And looking at the Marquette poll, the view of that plant improved slightly in terms of the impact outstate. But it was, again, an issue for Walker of where are your priorities? Why is this happening? And the floor for that really dropped out, in my mind, in talking to people, from when we found out it could take 25 years to break even.
Yes.
We won't know for a couple of decades if this Foxconn plant was worth it. We also don't know at this point if they're going to maximize what the giant glass, production. Now it's more modest-sized screens. I mean, they're big screens, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But the massive ones aren't being built initially. There are all kinds of questions about what's happening. We saw a new audit of the Foxconn deal that showed that the way it was crafted, you could get paid for being outside of Wisconsin doing work for the company. So
the auditors suggested that be fixed.
Yes. Right. Now, I think it clashed with state law, so there's something going on there. But anyway, this issue in summer of 17, I was told by Republicans, it was a grand slam that it guaranteed Walker's going to get reelected. And it ended up being a burden for him in the end, his reelection bid.
Which is a great time to listen to some comments from Governor Walker, from Speaker Ryan, and from the president on Foxconn. So let's listen to their comments on that huge investment by the Taiwanese company in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin.
Foxconn will add $51 billion to the state's economy over the next 15 years. $18 for every $1 in tax incentives, 18-1, sounds like a pretty good return on the taxpayers' dollars.
What this shows is we are fulfilling our generation's commitment, duty, and legacy that we do in this country. What is that commitment? What is that legacy? You leave the next generation better off.
And I'm pleased to report that Foxconn intends to build 100% of the factory with beautiful American concrete and beautiful American steel made right here.
I have Governor Walker and Foxconn using a model on the campus when President Trump is visiting that includes a Corning glass plant that is no longer happening. Why is Governor Walker announcing innovation centers in Green Bay, in Eau Claire, yet nobody there has heard anything about purchase price, economic justification, or when there will be a closing other than it will happen after the election?
Get it, right? Let's go get it. Come on.
Okay, Henry, take us to number six. Rebecca Dallet, a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge, was elected to the state Supreme Court in April. Why is this number six?
First progressive candidate to win an open Supreme Court seat in Wisconsin in 25 years, I believe. This was another sign of the Democratic wave that was hitting Wisconsin. It was more intense, like in the spring. It was another sign to Governor Walker of a blue wave coming, another rallying cry to his supporters of, you must engage to get ready. It also sets up an interesting 2 years, because right now Justice Abramson's retiring. Her seat is open in the April election.
Yes.
We have appeals court judges Brian Hagedorn and Lisa Neubauer. Neubauer is kind of the left of center candidate. Hagedorn is a conservative candidate. If Neubauer holds on to that seat, that means 2020 Daniel Kelly's seat is for all the marbles, because it's a 4-3 conservative majority, has been for a decade, I believe. If Neubauer can win, then you set up 2020 being it. And that played into the extraordinary session, where Republicans toyed with the idea and dropped eventually of moving the primary, the presidential primary, off that April ballot, because they know if Democrats have a contested primary for president in 2020, and there's no corresponding race for Republicans with Donald Trump, that means Kelly would face a surge in Democratic turnout trying to retain his seat. That's not good news for Daniel Kelly. Now, if it is for all the marbles, you can betcha that the WMCs of the world, from the kind of conservative side, will spend a lot of money to try and help Daniel Kelly, because they want to hold that court. But Dallet's win narrowed the majority and opens the door to this kind of next 2 years being like really interesting Supreme Court races.
Okay, let's go to number five. Take us. In January, Democrat Patty Schachner won a special election in the 10th Senate District, Western Wisconsin, that had been represented by Sheila Harsdorf, and before that, her brother, and Alice Clausing, a Democrat. JR, you and I had a long discussion about why this is number five. Mm-hmm. You passionately threatened me over this. Why?
It would be higher on my list, because a lot of these things, like, they weren't shocks. Tammy Baldwin was not a shock. Republicans holding the ledger was not a shock. This was the first oh my moment for me in 2018. I was in the office on a snowy January night adding up returns from the four counties and went, holy smokes, I think she's going to win. Now, remember, this is a seat that Donald Trump won by like 16 or 17 points in 2016. Not 14 months later, she won and won by a decent margin. This was the sign, the canary in the coal mine of the Democratic wave hitting Wisconsin. Remember in 17, Tony Evers ran against a very flawed candidate for re-election for DPI superintendent. There was nobody even challenging Justice Ziegler for re-election. So there wasn't really anything in 17 to tell you kind of what was percolating on the ground. This told you where the Democratic base was and set the stage for Rebecca Dallet, for Tony Evers. I mean, this was the moment where
Caleb
you go,
Frostman.
Yes, Caleb Frostman in June. You go, okay, something's going on. Now, you mentioned Frostman. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, seeing what was going on, spent big in that June special election to hold on to that seat in the 42nd Assembly District with John Plumer to try and beat back the perception of a wave building.
Mm-hmm.
Frostman did lose in November when the normal turnout kind of came out with
right.
Governor Walker.
85,000 votes as opposed to about 25 in the special election.
But it showed you the intensity of the base. Now, my questions are, going forward, where is that base right now and going into the April election? Because you just had this extraordinary recession. that passed these things that irritated the Democratic base. We're used to having an older, whiter, more conservative electorate in Wisconsin in the April election. Is this a change where we're going to see Dems get engaged and excited for April elections? If that is, it changes the dynamic a little bit. I'm not predicting that. I'm just asking the question of what will it look like in April, and the Schottner win, like I said, it was the harbinger of things to come. Now, she's going to have a difficult time in 2020 winning re-election. That's a Republican seat. But she definitely woke some people up, what's going on in Wisconsin in January.
But that is one of the fastest growing areas of Wisconsin. You're right across the river from Minnesota. Many people commute across that river. So it's just a very changing district.
I went and looked in the November election. All three assembly seats were won comfortably by Republicans. I mean, one not as comfortably as the other two. But she really broke the mold. The questions are for her. She's got this background. I think she's a bear hunter.
Medical examiner.
Yeah.
School board member.
So she's got a little reputation beyond being a Democrat. How does it play out in 2020? I think she's going to be a top target for Republicans in 2020. No two ways about it. But her win was a significant factor in what we saw the rest of the year.
Which is why he convinced me it was number five. Take us to number four. Paul Ryan, after 20 years of representing the 1st Congressional District and ending his career as Speaker, the first Wisconsin member of Congress to be Speaker, 2015 through 2018, retires. JR, your take before we listen to Mr. Ryan's speech?
A couple things. Remember, Randy Brice got into that race in the summer of 17 and made an immediate splash with rollout video, and he became a vessel for people who don't like Paul Ryan on the left to funnel money, to try and give Paul Ryan a hard time. Randy Brice has raised more money as a House candidate than anybody I've ever seen as a first-time House candidate.
He was a Bernie baby. Go ahead.
The fundraising was incredible. Now, the candidate was flawed. The message got off track at times, and he lost to Brian Stile. But you can't deny that, you know, Bryce's fundraising was driven by the targeting Paul Ryan. He lost favor with Republicans who were not happy about him. You look at polling before he stepped down or decided he was going to seek re-election. The Ryan brand dropped off in Wisconsin. And he gave this speech, you know, his farewell address, talking about, like, you know,
politics
things they've
is
done.
Broken. Yeah. And we're going to hear a segment of that speech here in a minute.
And he laid out three things for lawmakers in general to work on going forward. One was immigration. One was
entitlement reform.
And looking at that speech, it's like, well, wait, but you were Speaker.
That's right.
So I've heard from people going, well, he had the opportunity to work on all these things. And he didn't get it done. Why?
Okay, which is now why we should hear from. Let's listen to about 1 minute of Mr. Ryan's farewell speech given yesterday at the Library of Congress. Please.
You know, we have a good sense of what our politics should look like. A great clash of ideas, a civil, passionate discourse through which we debate and resolve our differences. Our system doesn't just allow for that. Our system depends on that. One side may win, one side may lose. We dust ourselves off, and then we start anew, knowing that each one fought in pursuit of their honest ideals. But today, too often, genuine disagreement quickly gives way to intense distrust. We spend far more time trying to convict one another than we do trying to develop our own convictions. Being against someone has more currency than being for anything. And each of us has found ourselves operating on the wrong side of this equation from time to time. And all of this gets amplified by technology, with an incentive structure that preys on people's fears and algorithms that play on anger. Outrage has become a brand. And all of this pulls on the threads of our common humanity in what could be our unraveling.
Just a little P.S. on Mr. Ryan. He said politics is broken. Outrage is now a brand.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't know how to fix it.
No. Also worth noting, his retirement was a little bit of a surprise. You know, he looked like he was kind of gearing toward a re-election bid. You also have to note that this is a guy who was the ideas guy for the Republican Party these years.
Mr. Wonk.
And got a handful of bills signed into law in 20 years. He's the architect of the tax overhaul, which is a crowning achievement, but he left out the entitlement reform they talked about for years. I mean, there's just this really mixed legacy, and he didn't want the job as Speaker, but when called upon to do it, he didn't seem to be like the guy who would go in there and, like, bust kneecaps. And as leader, you have to do that sometimes. And he would decry the tenor, but would only step to Trump once in a while. And other times he worked with. It was really.
And then he went out and raised like $100 million.
Oh, fundraising. Unbelievable.
Yeah, understand. And you and I don't know what he's going to be doing in his next life.
No, but, he talked about his dad died at a young age.
Yep.
He's got three young children and wants to be there for them. You know, and they made sacrifice for him to be speaker.
Right. Okay, lead us into number three. Nicely done. The lame duck session, they came back in, and the original bills they drafted would have gone a lot farther than what actually passed, but it was still some major changes. And any parallels that you're aware of in Wisconsin history for a lame duck session that elevated the legislative branch at the expense of the executive branch?
During the joint finance hearing on the bills, Reference Bureau gave us a rundown of other lame duck sessions in the Wisconsin history. There was one, obviously, in 2010, which Republicans point to a lot, point to a lot in this debate, when Democrats tried to push through union contracts. But there was one, like, in the 60s, like a Rose Bowl commission. I mean, there's other than, they did other things. But from what they told us, nothing that was equated like this. And now this story, this may be here at three because the freshness of what happened. It'll take some time to figure out the true impact of this lame duck session. But it's the first one that I've covered, the way this happened, that played out, the things that they tried to do after losing the governor's office. Speaker Robin Voss will swear up and down. He's working on this back in the spring and the summer, that no matter who's going to be governor, they would have done it. I have a suspicion if it were so Governor Walker for third term, these changes may take effect, may have taken effect in 2023 after he was done. That said, there's still something unique about what happened, and the true legacy may take some time to figure out what the impact is of what they did.
Okay, this is number three for me because of the animus and the anger, and I still have a question of how significantly it poisons the well for the next session. So that's why it's number three. And as an example of that animus, let's listen to some final exchanges by all four legislative leaders about this lame duck session, please.
We're here because you don't trust Tony Evers and you don't want to give up power. You're sore losers after the result of the election. If it was a good idea, you had 8 years to do it. If it's a good idea, we can do it in the next session. But rushing it through on 3 days' notice in a ridiculous last 24 hours of debate, does anybody honestly think that this is the right way to do business?
You are so grossly exaggerating what is in this bill. It makes me sick. Because you're supposed to be legislators. And you're spending most of your time talking about what the executive branch needs and does. If you'd actually read the bill and look at it and opened your mind to say, why wouldn't we want to know about the transfers in the Veterans Department? How about saying that we want to make sure that if they're going to do things, they tell the public? Why is that a bad thing? You have whipped up people with a whole lot of things that are inferred, or you think it could be a worst case scenario with no proof. And all that you do is scare people.
The stealing of power from Governor-elect Evers and Attorney General-elect Call now adds to the brokenness of this institution. It is ridiculous that Republicans are more concerned with clinging to power than accepting an election. The Republican legacy will be that of corruption and shameless power grabs and the misplaced priorities that ignore issues facing Wisconsin families.
I'm concerned. I think that Governor-elect Evers is going to bring a liberal agenda to Wisconsin. On February 15th, Governor-elect Evers is going to be over there in the Assembly Chamber rolling out a state budget. And there are going to be many provisions of that budget that I am totally going to disagree with. But it's his ability to make the case that that's the way to go. And it's this branch of government. It is our responsibility to once again highlight the differences.
The will of the people has been officially been ignored. The fact of the matter is that the four of us won those races. I am very concerned that the 2.6 million people in that voted and they represent the rest of the people of Wisconsin did not have their voices heard.
We're closing in, Henry. Take us to number two. Love it. Democrat Josh Call beats first term Attorney General Republican Brad Schimmel. And I want to come back to it. The Marquette poll in September said 81% didn't know him, didn't have enough knowledge, and he wins on November 6th. So this is solidly my number two. You?
So to me, and I almost spoiled the number one pick, but they're related, and this is why. In a lot of ways, there was a kind of a coattail effect with what happened. So what happened at the top of the ticket went down the ballot. Now, it's interesting because Tammy Baldwin, look at how your ballot was set up in November. It went governor, attorney general, I think secretary of state and treasurer or vice versa. Baldwin was last. So she won big, but you had to get to Baldwin fifth. So what I'm wondering by bringing that up is, was it basically what happened at the top of the ticket filtered down? Now, Doug LaFollette, secretary, is his own brand. That name carries him no matter what. So take him out. But Democrats, and this is part of why I think calls up high, they swept every constitutional office.
Yes.
First time since 1982 they won all of them. They lost them in 86 when Tommy won the governor's office. And you look at the results, there are all kinds of little funky things that may have played into it. Like the Constitution Party candidate, he got, I can't remember, 20,000 votes, something like that. Now, you can't, in my mind, just say all the third-party candidate votes here. Well, if he weren't there, they'd go here. But one of the anti-abortion groups endorsed him because Schimmel didn't return their questionnaire. So did that play a role? What about the Trump factor? What about the rape kit factor? What about the Walker factor? I mean, Schimmel gave an interview to Milwaukee TV station that he said he called like a death by a thousand cuts. And maybe it was. But Josh Call, I heard lots of good things about the ad that he ran about the rape kits. I mean, there was fodder there,
yes.
What he did. Now, the issue for Call is he walks into an office that, in my mind, is more impacted by the lame duck session than the governor's office is. There were more significant changes because from now on, he has to get settlements approved by the legislature.
By the ledge.
Money from settlements doesn't go to his coffer at DOJ, but goes to the general fund.
Right.
Things like that. Now, they did take away.
And he cannot unilaterally withdraw from the ACA lawsuit.
And if lawmakers want to get their own attorneys to defend themselves in lawsuits,
they can. Right.
They took away what, and I say egregious in that the most impactful or controversial provision, but the most egregious one was saying, okay, Attorney General, we don't like how you're doing this, defending the statute. We're going to pull you off the case and substitute our attorneys for you. Now, that raised all kinds of constitutional issues. Former Governor Jim Doyle, also former Attorney General, did a news conference focusing on that, saying that was a problem. You can't tell courts who to recognize as the lawyer. They pulled that piece out. But I get the impression that those pieces, that plus the primary move that they tried and didn't do, that really is what kind of inflamed the tensions. Yes, a lot of the stuff from the lame duck session is about how government interacts with each other. But those things help Republicans lose the message, but they're also going to impact Josh Call as Attorney General.
But I was told one thing I found fascinating. Governor Evers can fill the number that you were using, 270 jobs. Josh Call, coming in as Attorney General, could fill 8, and then when you take away the 4 office of the Solicitor General, he's just like 4. So it's just so intriguing. Henry, number one, let's go. How could it be otherwise? How could it be otherwise? The state superintendent of public instruction runs as a Democrat and ousts Republican Governor Scott Walker by a very thin margin, less than 1%. That's the number one story. JR.
A year ago, as we sat here, we looked at the field and went, who are these Democrats? Who knows who they are? And they really hadn't really kind of coalesced yet. How are they going to raise the money? What's the message going to be? Walker's going to have so much money. What's going to go on? And then, like I said, canary in the coal mine, Patty Schottner. And then Rebecca Dallet. And then Caleb Frostman. Now, to Walker's credit, it wasn't a blowout. It was actually more than 1%, 1 point some percent, 30,000 votes.
1 or 2 or something.
But to Walker's credit, it wasn't a blowout. He closed the gap. But you also have a guy who's way better known, had way more money, and I think way more outside help, and he lost. And there could be a number of things going into that. One, Walker fatigue. You know, you're asking for a third term. We're not used to third terms in Wisconsin. Tommy Thompson's the exception to the rule. Most of our governors have not done more than 8 years, right? So third term is kind of like, well, what would you do differently? What's the message going to be?
But it felt like a fourth, given the 2012 recall.
Absolutely. And Walker struggled all year, from people I've talked to, in finding the right message. He changed his stripes in some ways. If you go back and look at how he ran in 10 and 14, he was going to clean up government, downsize it, going to cut your taxes, the conservative answer, compassionate conservative answer to all these problems. He went from that to being a guy who wanted to be the education governor, to investing in all these things, to spending money. It, in some ways, didn't really jibe with what we knew of Walker. Then you add in, like, they ran for president. People weren't happy about that. He had a hard time overcoming that. The Trump factor. How did Trump play into all this? You know, I mean, you can't deny that Donald Trump factored in everything anymore. He's a dominating factor in Wisconsin politics, national politics. All these things came into play. Then you have Evers, who was, like, dismissed by Republicans, always this milquetoast education guy.
But he won three statewide elections.
Still had low name ID
yep.
going through. But you watch that primary. There were, what, 14 Democrats running that primary. And Evers, it was almost always his to lose because he'd run statewide and won. I think he ran two other times and lost before he won the first one. So he's got five statewide bids under his belt. He was just better known. He'd had the constituencies behind him before. And he just kind of rode this gradual ascension to the nomination.
He started out with a base of 28 to 34% of Democrats who had an opinion.
Yeah.
And he just had to build from that and not, as Obama said, not do stupid stuff. And he got the nomination.
And the day after the election, he's got this small staff because they all had small staffs. Well, a couple of them had large staffs. They also dropped out after in the process.
Mr. Grimes.
But among those Democrats, he had a small staff, had to go from that to staffing up and took off from there. And give him credit. Now, he may be milquetoast. You know, you can call him boring if you want. You also got to call him governor, right? So
yes.
January 7th.
As we're about to hear.
6th. Evers had this advantage where, because of who he wasn't Walker. He's not going to run for president, right? He's not going to be somebody who's going to take on these, like, be this kind of bomb thrower about things. He's kind of a nicer man that you're like, oh, he's only a decent guy. And for Democrats, and talking to people, they can project their hopes onto him. Because Evers wasn't that well known. He wasn't somebody who had, like, this big fight at the county level about the pensions like Walker did, or you know, been the AG like Jim Doyle for 12 years, whatever it was. So if you're a Democratic voter, you say, well, I don't like this about Walker. I think he'll do this. And you can project onto him what you think is going to happen.
Okay, which is a great time to hear from both candidates. Governor Walker talking about his legacy, and Mr. Evers at the budget listening session in La Crosse, which Wisconsin I attended, casting it forward. This is a listening process. Come, let us build this budget together. So let's listen to both Governor Walker, outgoing on January 7, Governor Tony Evers, incoming January 7.
Since I've been governor, more than 94% of the bills I've signed into law, more than 94% had more than Republican votes. Our legacy isn't about an extraordinary session. Our legacy is about the fact that there are more people employed in the state of Wisconsin than ever before, that we've had 9 consecutive months of record low unemployment, that we've made more, a larger actual dollar investment in the schools than ever before, that our schools continue to have some of the highest graduation rates and some of the highest ACT rates in the nation. Unlike any governor before us, Democrat or Republican alike, for the first time ever, we've actually covered everyone living in poverty under Medicaid. Those are the things that our legacy will judge on, and most specifically, with Act 10, we not only saved the taxpayers of the state over $8 billion, we got rid of seniority and tenure and now allow schools and local and state governments to employ people based on merit and hire people based on merit and pay them based on performance. That's been a tremendous turnaround in our schools and our local governments. My final note will be, just as I did on day one, on the last day of my term, I will always do what's right.
I know not everybody in this room had a chance to vote for me. I actually voted for one of my opponents. And that's okay, because I won. It is important for us as Wisconsinites to develop a good budget that's reflective of the will of the people. Budget is the most important policy making a piece of work that's done every 2 years in the state of Wisconsin. It drives the state in a direction that the people of Wisconsin want. You're going to have a chance to voice your concerns, voice your suggestions. Now contrast that with the last session of the legislature that happened a couple weeks ago. Dead of night, very little public input, major decisions made. This is a different day, folks.
All of this sets a table for another potentially remarkable 2019. Mm-hmm. So we would be remiss if we didn't consider some of the major questions that you and I have about 2019. You go first.
First one, the Tony Evers budget. What's it look like? What are his priorities? And how do Republicans treat it? They've been talking about going off, we call it the base budget, basically the existing budget, ignoring what Evers did.
Right.
That'll be fascinating to watch. Also, when they get done with it, Republicans in the legislature, will they rework that budget and give it to Evers? Can he use his partial veto authority to the extent that he's happy? We veto the entire thing? And will the budget be done before June 30th?
Okay, mine is, I'm really going to look for how soon the words climate change reappear on the DNR website, and when our incoming DNR secretary, assuming he's confirmed, how he brings science back into some of these major environmental decisions that we're going to face over, not just in 2019, but beyond that. Your turn.
I want to watch the Supreme Court race. It might give you an early temperature of if the Democrat base is still engaged and to what extent, and how do conservatives approach that race now, knowing that the 2020 dynamic with Daniel Kelly could be a difficult one for him. So is it very expensive? We've also, quite frankly, had a run of races where female candidates have won for Supreme Court. How does that play into this? You know, I mean, Dalit's victory, is that the playbook that you use? Because she was a little bit more catering toward, you know, being left of center, where Neubauer seems to be running more of a traditional campaign of get a lot of support, a lot of endorsements, run the nonpartisan, like, I'm just a judge kind of thing, not a partisan. How does that play out?
Okay, and I'm going to say, I wonder whether Mr. Ray Cross, president of the UW system, is going to have that job when you and I are doing this a year from now. When Mr. Evers says the worst part of his old job was serving on the Board of Regents, I understand what you're going to say. You're going to say that the regents are still Governor Walker's appointees?
Yep.
Okay, but I have a question whether Mr. Cross, who's had a long, distinguished career, Vietnam War veteran, has that job a year from now. Your final prediction.
The role that Robin Voss plays in the Capitol going forward. Robin Voss is trying to elevate himself as the conservative voice to counter Governor Evers. Republicans now are not saying the wilderness, but they don't have a top person anymore. Governor Walker was a spokesman for the party, for the brand, for government. Now that's gone. So you have Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator. You have Robin Voss, the Speaker. Fitzgerald, the majority in the Senate, he doesn't really want that kind of role. He's got his own thing to deal with his caucus.
Yep.
But Robin Voss, there are all kinds of rumors about him trying to staff up his caucus to kind of be a check on the administration. How does that work, and how does he perform in this role, if he can pull it off, of being the anti-governor?
Which is why two political wonks, JR and I, are going to sort this through in 2019. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm JR Ross.
And I want to thank Henry Cerruggi for our taking us out. Rewind Year in
Your
Review.
Year in
Thank
Review
you.
Is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.